The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
Welcome to the future you. Frank Lloyd Wright once said, "Study nature, love nature, stay close to nature, and it will never fail you." At Zija, we love nature. We study nature. In India, we discovered Moringa and created Moringa Supermix, a revolutionary new combination of organic ingredients, including natural vitamins, minerals, proteins, antioxidants, and omega oils. Zija's new Moringa Supermix will help you make a change for the better. Simply click on the Zija banner on the UKHealthRadio.com homepage. Power people need power vitality.
Dr. Brian Halverson is one of the UK's leading holistic dentists. He is the author of Great Teeth for Life and lectures widely to the public and to health practitioners. Brian is passionate about providing preventative information to guide us through all the stages of our lifetime. To find out more about Brian, go to www.brianhalverson.com. And now here is Dr. Brian Halverson.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way.
Hi, Brian here, the integrated dentist for UK Health Radio. This show is dedicated to a subject which we really do not really like to talk about very much. Bad breath. My guest today is Luke Thorley, who is a dentist. Luke, tell me, what got you involved in this area of, health as opposed to just purely mouth?
Well, I was approached by a leading mouthwash company, CB12, and asked them about, firstly, I was asked about my opinions on a certain subject matter. And over time, this has evolved into become quite a nice synergistic relationship where, you know, they will ask me to give my feedback on some research that they conduct about the public's perception of bad breath, oral health, and everything in between.
Yeah, and I understand that you have done a lot of research. Can you tell me what your results have been? Because this is not often recorded, even for myself as a dentist, about the sort of widespread effects of this particular area of what I'll call dental concern.
Yeah, so the research that CB12 conducted was fascinating, really. I mean, up to 80% of people were saying that bad breath they feel it's more unattractive than, say, someone's personality or their sense of humor. And, you know, considering that is often the first thing that you notice about a person, you know, when you say hello to someone or you greet them, and even going further now in the UK, most people greet with a kiss or, you know, a little cuddle to start with. You know, people are getting a little bit more up close and personal than they might have used to in the past.
Yeah, is there any specific age group where this appears to be more psychologically important?
There's the specific age group is from after 25. So when people start to look at going into work, when they start, you know, thinking about job interviews, dating, progression, moving through life, and intimate times, you know, husbands and wives. It's far reaching, this research, but generally it's you know, after people become adults and they start to do things of their own accords and pick up bad habits and do things that, you know, they wouldn't have done when their parents were looking after them, and that's when, you know, these things creep into it, become a problem.
Yes, I mean, obviously, as a practitioner myself, I've often asked, but often it's not as frequently as I'd normally expect. Do you find the same yourself?
Let me understand the question. Are you asking, do I find that people don't mention it as much as I would expect them to mention it?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I agree with you there. You know, when you're out and about in public and you meet your friends or they introduce you to their friends, and as a dentist, it's difficult because you'll know yourself, the first thing you look at is the teeth, and no matter how you try and stop yourself from doing it, you do it straight away. And then the next thing is if you introduce them and they come over, and you know, and I know that periodontal gum disease and tooth decay, it can give off a scent from someone. And if they've had loads of coffee or if they're a smoker, you can sense that. And as a dentist, over time, you start to pick up these things. And if they get, untreated, then that's when it starts being noticed by their friends and family, work colleagues. And that's really where we're trying to break down that stigma.
Yes. So if we look at what I would call causes, as you know, it is multifactorial.
Correct, yeah.
So if we say, first of all, let's look at the oral health of the situation. The reason I say that is that often there is a, to be quite personal, there's often a particular odour that comes out of what I'll call poor dental health, especially gum health.
I completely agree. I mean, that's for me, that's a telltale sign. You can smell it, and I don't know if you know this, feel the same thing. If a patient walks in the door of your surgery, you know straight away. And you can sometimes, in severe cases, when it's got really advanced, you can smell it for some time afterwards, after it leaves a sort of lingering smell that's trails them out of the waiting room and out of the practice. And, a lot of the time the people aren't aware of it because it doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen, the smell isn't there one day and then it is there the next day. It happens over time. And like everything, if you gain weight, you don't gain weight straight away. So you don't notice it for some time afterwards. And it's the same I find with the malodor, that it takes a little bit of time for people to develop it and then for other people to notice it. And the last person to notice is normally the person that it's affecting.
Yes, I do agree. And the fact is that if you have got your loved ones or friends, it's a classic thing where often they really don't want to mention it.
Yeah, we're too polite. As Brits, we're too polite. We won't rush into saying things that we think might cause offence very easily. In other parts of Europe, they would not even hesitate to say something, and be as blunt as they wanted off the cuff and say things about their friends, relatives, loved ones. They will just tell them immediately. But Brits have a very funny way of, avoiding the conversation and doing everything they can not to make someone else feel, bad. And that's just the nature of British people. They're very polite.
Yes. And I remember myself often as a practitioner that I would often ask my nurse, what does my breath smell like? Because it's the last thing that you think that you could be, a culprit in an area that you should be looking at preventing.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's a little different. It's easy for us. Like, I agree. If you go for lunch, and let's say you go for a lunch with the rest of the practice, it's not normally a sandwich you're having. It's normally you might go for some fish, or you might, there might be some onions in there. And you always go back to work and think, oh, God, I'm going to have to, get some mouthwash in there and make sure that I don't, come across to the patients. I can't be telling them, you've got halitosis and actually it's me that's the problem and not them. It's a very difficult one. I agree. In the past, I've also said to my nurses, are we good to go? Is everything okay? But for us, it's okay to breathe on each other. But certainly in offices, it's not the norm.
That's right. I mean, it's this social environment.
Yeah.
But if we're looking at causes of bad breath, we have to consider it as a health issue.
I agree.
Because as far as I'm concerned, we're looking at a situation where, in effect, we shouldn't have bad breath. So could you, Luke, go over the various causative factors related to not only mouth health, but general health as well? So if we could include in that things such as...
You can go over those, no problem at all.
Strong dietary issues as well. So that we could give the listeners a full spectrum of where we're looking at and where we can look at then hopefully preventing.
Yeah, we're looking at making things consistent and then stopping, imbalances in any area. And that can be, first things first is staying well hydrated. You know yourself and now I know, and other dental professionals will all say that anything that causes the mouth to become more dry, alcohol, running, gym, anxiety, makes the imbalance in the mouth between the bacteria that will keep the mouth nice and stable and the ones that may cause the malodor. That's where the problem lies. And once you tip it in favor of the bad bacteria, then that's when we might get this malodor coming across. Then going further, if we start to look at diet, you know, if we really make sure that we've got a high nutritionist diet, full of fiber, full of folate acid, making sure that, you know, things like pineapple and broccoli, these foods are very highly textured. And even if you don't brush your tongue in the morning and in the afternoon, the high fibrous surface texture of those fruits and vegetables actually have been shown to clean the tongue as they go down, and they can take those very fine micro particles of food off the tongue and then not leave any for the bacteria to feed off. And then, you know, this is where the imbalance may not be caused.
And that's a very interesting fact, because in the past we've had experts speaking on things such as the microbiome and looking at imbalances, but the issue of fiber has always tended to be more from the point of view of gut health, i.e. the prebiotic and probiotic effects. But the issue of having high fiber to literally disinfect, stroke, frictionally clean the mouth, mm-hmm. is something that really is a very, very interesting point, and never really struck me in all my time.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the toothbrush is designed to be abrasive, and any food that you eat that is abrasive will have the same form of effect, and whether that be helping to clean in between the teeth or right along the gum level, if you're having foods that are a little bit abrasive, every little bit helps.
Yes, I think that's a really very, very interesting and valid point, because if you look at what we call an unhealthy diet, the main factor often is the fact that it's completely lacking in fiber.
Well, it's lacking in fiber and any nutrition, and it's so easy to eat. You know, a piece of broccoli is a lot harder to eat than a piece of fried chicken, for sure.
And there is a strong argument to say that although it's not to everybody's taste, but the more raw food you can have also has a very beneficial effect on the mouth environment as well. So, and again, it's possibly, as you rightly say, due to the fact that we've not broken down that fiber and you've still got stuff that really has acts as a quite a frictional force, especially the soft tissues.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's in the soft tissues, the tongue, where these food particles will sit, and especially where the bacteria is mainly causing the biggest problem. You know, we're talking about a level that you can't see to the naked eye, but it's certainly there. We both know it's there, and they're like, the tongue has almost like fingers all the way along it, and it's the deep parts in between the fingers on the surface of the tongue is where this bacteria sits. And if it's being fed by food that's left to just sit there all day, of course it's going to have a detrimental effect on the way that we come across to another person.
Yes, so if we take a holistic viewpoint, especially looking at the tongue, it is one part of the mouth that we always inspect, mainly for pathology such as mouth cancer, and other sort of possibly rashes, and as we know that things like striations caused by stress and lichen planus all have an effect. But I suppose also, if you have, say, for example, a deeply furrowed tongue, which again can be a nutritional deficiency, that this also could contribute to a doubling of the effect of having bad breath.
Yeah, that's just so true. I mean, the amount of times you look inside a patient's mouth and you, the tongue is the worst area, and the only reason for that is diet. I mean, there's very few other causes for it, and dehydration, poor diet, poor amounts of iron and zinc, and it's seen in fish patterns on the tongue. It's alarming in some cases.
Yes, I remember we go back many years, where the first thing that a medical practitioner would do would be to ask somebody to stick their tongue out to look at their mm-hmm. general health. Whereas, of course, now I think most modern trained medical practitioners really wouldn't know where to start.
I completely agree. I don't think I've ever been to the doctor and he said, you know, kind of look at the back of your tongue before, but certainly we as dentists, we certainly try, you know, make sure that that's the first thing that we look at, all the soft tissues, make sure they're right, and then move on to the teeth. And you know, that's why we're trying to make sure that this this bad breath and that the mouthwash that's implemented is done correctly.
Yeah, that's really fascinated again, because getting back to a point you made about dehydration, there is no doubt that in a dry mouth, and of course, I suppose if you said somebody came in who had, say, a dry mouth, the first thing that we'd ask them would be possibly the levels of stress they're under.
Yeah, I agree.
Which would then lead to the fact that they could also be, because of that stress, they would be then looking at saying, well, is it because this is why I'm getting bad breath as well? So you're almost having a vicious circle.
Yeah, I agree, and that's why we're trying to get people to go to the website, cb12.co.uk. They can check out the research on there. They can also like our Facebook page and follow us on Instagram and check out all the details on there.
Part two of the show is something which I think a lot of people will find very deep in their psyche, and that is fear of the dentist. Now, I'd like to talk about it from a much more holistic point of view. Why is it that in almost conversation, jokes, that often, you know, bad experiences, fears, phobias focus back on teeth and the mouth and dentists and the dental profession? Well, let's go back to the sort of fundamentals of how important the mouth is. If we look at virtually every single creature on the planet, especially mammals, fish, that the mouth is almost the most important part of their anatomy. Not just because they have to feed with their mouth and therefore the nutrition mainly goes through the mouth, but also the fact that if you do not have a mouth, for most creatures, they would die. If you say, like, for example, the story of the elephant whose teeth wear out and they go off to literally die, there's a deep fundamental that if your mouth isn't working properly, then it will affect your survival. Now, I know that from us in a civilized, inverted commas, society, we can eat soft, pappy, mushy foods, and it really almost doesn't matter if we've got any teeth at all. But that's not really the point when it comes to the fear and anxiety of if your mouth isn't working properly, or from the point of view that it's even being interfered with by a dentist. The other thing as well is that if we look at places where there are things like famine, that if you look at these poor children who are often on the verge of death, that you look at their bodies, which are completely emaciated, they've got all the signs of both malnutrition and fat hunger and famine, but they've still got well-formed teeth. Now, you ask yourself, why is this? It's because the fundamentals of nature is the fact that if you haven't got the equipment to actually eat and masticate food, then you would die. So teeth and the mouth are so important. And even if you take our relatives, the great apes, that everything in the mouth is actually felt, or the mouth is used for feeling things, not just for eating. So, you know, there's everything, all the taste mechanisms, you know, and you need moisture in the mouth so that you can both smell and so on. So there's so many of our senses are related to the mouth. So we can see from this that if in fact things aren't working properly, that we build up a genuine fear of what is the most fearful thing in our life, and that is the loss of our life. So although it might seem a very distant relationship between the fear of loss of our life and in fact visiting the dentist, you can see where from a historical and natural background that why we can have such deep my false teeth are getting loose again. We've got this deep-seated fear of the fact that our whole well-being could be in jeopardy. Now, vast majority of the people in the westernized world visit the dentist, and often, although they may be fearful, they often overcome this fear, and there are even people who, in fact, quite frankly, enjoy coming to the dentist. But where does genuine fear phobia often start? And it's a bit like everything else. It's often due to sometimes childhood experiences. So that often, it may not be the fact that somebody's had a painful experience, it may be that the dentist was a little bit sharp with them, or was rough with them as a child, and or they walked into the surgery and they may have seen mum or dad having something which they were uncomfortable with, and that energy has been relayed to that child. Why I say this is because from a holistic point of view, I think that if we can not only keep our children disease free, but also not needing what I would call invasive or dentistry that could involve fearful or traumatic experiences, then we can build a clean, fearless picture for a child who can come and visit the dentist and say, look, we went there with mum and dad at, say, age 1, 2, 3, 4, and it all became a pleasant experience. But against that, you only need one situation which can suddenly turn what is a genuinely, well, you know, it's a regular habit, say from a dentist who might just even poke their gums or what have you, and this can immediately cascade into a severe upset, which not only is very distressing at the time, but can leave literally a scar on the mind, so that any time when they're an adult, that they have sight and smell of the surgery, the equipment, or even just a white coat or what have you, that suddenly it cascades into the fear response, which, you know, the usual, you know, adrenaline starts to flow, and it becomes then a chemical reaction, which is very, very difficult to control. Now, can you then, if you say you have this fear, overcome it? And I certainly believe that, in fact, this is possible. Because as you become older, and I'm only meaning really at the age of reasoning, that if you can actually explain that, if you think about it, fear and anxiety is really about of the unknown, and possibly the unknown in the future. So that if somebody is phobic or very fearful, that by almost exposure to, say, the dentist or the nurse or just in the environment, without really knowing that they're not going to have any invasive treatment or and in fact it'd just be a chat, that slowly we can look at getting somebody who has this deep scar, fear scar, and gradually convert it, so that in effect the good reasons for coming to the dentist, which should be mainly prevention, can be then instituted. Sometimes dentists do have a difficult decision between the fact that treatment is required, but the patient is very fearful, and you then sort of argue, should you do that treatment there and then, or have a period of time building up to that treatment? My personal advice, and it is an idealist situation, I know, is that if a situation, say like a hole in the tooth or a broken tooth,
is not actually giving discomfort or likely to lead to further disease, but the patient is extremely fearful, then the answer is I think that it should be a process of building that confidence until such time as that individual can actually say, look, I am ready for this treatment and I fully understand, even simple sort of, what can you say, assurances, such as, look, you know, if there's any discomfort or you want me to stop or you just purely want to walk out at any time, then please feel that you're under no pressure. And it's often these type of almost psychological get-outs that make people gradually become more confident. Now, I've seen over my long career many patients who have become really very, very fearful. And often they come to me and they require sometimes many, many hours of treatment in the chair. And normally, if that first session is painless, comfortable, patient feels they have full control of that situation, the confidence grows very rapidly. So that, say for example, they have 4 or 5 long sessions, I normally find by the end session that they're absolutely relaxed, they understand the routine, and there's very little reserve or anxiety related to that appointment. Now, here's the rub. You then say, well, we'd like to see you in 6 months' time to see how things are going. You see that same patient 6 months' time, and if you were to say, look, you know, everything's absolutely fine, you know, perfectly okay. But if you then might say, look, there's a small this, that, and the other need doing, or what have you, it's amazing how within that 6 months, that scar from the past has come to the front again, and you see that same anxiety and fear come back again. So although it may not be as bad, it is that deep-seated. And I think from a holistic point of view, we as dentists and dental staff such as hygienists and therapists really have to realize that we are dealing with such a core fear that we always have to be aware that we could lose a patient if we sort of dismiss their fears with a view of saying, look, you know, we must get on with this, and so on and so forth. Now, I am pleased to say that part of the undergraduate training especially is very much to do with things like how to, what should we say, have a good chairside manner so that patients do appear to sort of gradually get to know their dentists, have the confidence in that dentist. And this is why I think also that once you build a relationship with a dentist, you tend not to want to break that bond, because that is where the past experience, the healing of some of the scars from the past have been sown, and in fact, people can actually never like to come to the dentist. And if somebody says to me, oh, I love coming to see you, especially if I'm going to do treatment on them, I actually get a little bit concerned, because, you know, I think it's a natural apprehension that, you know, you are giving over your most valuable part of your body to somebody who could start interfering with it. So I think we always, as dentists and therapists within dentistry, have to realize that we are dealing with such a sensitive part of the body. And I think that in the main, we do a great job. But always remember as a patient that you are a customer, which means that you have the right to say yes and no. So I've often had, especially when I started my career, I used to discuss treatment options with patients, and the patients often used to say to me, because of the way they've been treated in the past, well, you're the dentist, you tell me what I should have done. And I said to them, I can give you advice and pros and cons, risk benefits of having treatment, but it's your teeth. You know, you are the final arbitrator of what you have done on your in your mouth. So it's got to be a two-way conversation, not a dentist acting as a sort of strict consultant saying you must have this done. But of course, if there are urgent problems, then of course the dentist might say, look, you know, this is something that we can't ignore or leave or what have you. And again, this is where the trust in that particular dentist is so important, because that trust leads to confidence and the lack of anxiety and fear. So I think that from a holistic point of view, it is much, much better to actually have a patient who in fact wants to come to the dentist because they realize the valuable benefits of dentistry, from the prevention, from the checking out that they haven't got any disease processes that we ought to be spotting early. So, but we need to have that relationship where we build the confidence and in fact, hopefully, the fact that when then something else needs to be done, say with a particular specialist in dentistry, that that is carried forward and there's a lessening of that apprehension about what is almost regarded as an everyday joke of dentists being the sort of givers of pain and discomfort. So I hope this has helped you as a listener sort of understand where not only, it's not just holistic, I think it's a general principle of the fact that always remember that you are in control of the environment, and that includes your mouth, teeth, and that we as dentists are doing our best, but it's got to be on a basis that there's a two-way relationship, and that two-way relationship also means that you have a right to look at what could be what I'll call a risk benefit of having any treatment and asking those questions. Because at the end of the day, my view is that something like dental well-being is a long-term project. It isn't just a one-off treatment. So I finish on saying really, do visit your dentist regularly. All the programs in the past have been things like about prevention. And if we can only start early enough with our children, they can actually have a relationship which has very few scars, mental scars, that are caused by having to have treatment, which I regard as unnecessary treatment, for things such as tooth decay on the young generation where this all can be prevented. I wish you good dental health and also generally abundance, health and happiness. Thank you for listening.
I can see clearly.